There's some research out there, quite a bit of it, that suggests that the best strategy for improving a child's diet is simply putting food on the table and sitting down together to eat it. Television viewing has often been linked with poor eating habits. We know that. That's why some University of Minnesota researchers embarked on a study of family meals. And we're going to be talking about that study and talking about how we should have our meals. Do we eat as a family? Do we watch TV when we do it? Or do we or do we all go off on our own? Sue Nitzke, our guest, UW-Madison, UW Extension, professor of nutritional sciences. She comes by every so often to talk with us about nutritional issues, and this is certainly one of them. And if you'd like to join in and have a question for her or a comment, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Sue, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Happy to be here, Larry.
Those Minnesota researchers, what did they come up with when they studied how people ate?
Well, you know, the Minnesota School of Public Health has a group of experts in nutrition for teens.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big grants that they have is a project called Project Eat, where they're working with kids from the Minnesota schools. And they now have been able to publish results of following some kids who were in high school when they started working with them and now are young adults off on their own. And they found... This is the first I know of some what we call longitudinal or
right.
over time kind of evidence. And they showed that the kids who reported eating with their families more often when they were in high school 4 or 5 years ago now report that they have better eating habits. They eat more fruit. They eat more dark green and orange vegetables. They drink less soft drinks. They get more calcium, magnesium, potassium, and fiber.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just from sitting down with your mom and dad or mom
Well,
or
you
dad.
Know, of course, it's not that simple. And before I sound like some fuddy-duddy that says, now you all have to eat with your family every single night, I will point out that when you can eat with your family, it is a wonderful opportunity to do some role modeling and try to have some pleasant conversation with your kids. It might only last a few minutes when they're teenagers, but these and many other studies actually are very consistent in showing that family meals do have value.
And what about that TV set?
Well, that actually has been the focus of a number of studies. I was surprised at how many studies I found that looked at TV watching. I mean, we have lots of evidence that kids who watch more TV are fatter and that sort of thing. But this was specifically on the question of whether the kids had better diets if the TV was turned off during the meal. And that turns out to be inconsistent from study to study. And also some of the best studies, including the Minnesota group, showed that it's not the same as for blacks and Hispanics as it is for whites. But overall, when they find an effect of having the TV on during the meal, it's always bad.
Oh.
So what I like is the quote that I found from the authors of the study from Minnesota. They said, you know, the first and most important thing is to eat with your family whenever you can. And then it'll be even better if you turn off the TV and, you know, have pleasant conversation, et cetera. But they've said, you know, if you have reticent teenagers who just aren't feeling like they want to converse, and that's the only way you can bring them to the table is to let them have the TV on, then the most important thing is to have them at the table with you. So, you know, kind of ideally, it's Leave It to Beaver, you know, Mom, June, and all the kids gathered around for Mom's homemade roast beef or whatever it was. These days, you won't find that very often, but that doesn't mean that the family meal isn't still important. So it's sort of ideal if the TV is off, but still worth doing if you have to have the TV on.
You know, we often, what we usually do, if the television is on at mealtime, we usually turn it off and then turn on some music and have some music in the background. That seems to go on.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually reminds me that one of the things that was brought up by several of the researchers is the importance of family rituals. apparently, and this is not my area, so don't let me go too far, children really feel a sense of belonging when there's things that are special for their family. So if it's having music, pleasant music on during dinner is something that the Mueller family enjoys, then that'll be something that your kids, Emily, et cetera, will probably take on into adulthood and remember that fondly.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Very good to
know.
Pat
yourself on the back.
Well, what about, I'm wondering in the study, in the research, is there a difference between the boys and the girls? Now, sex, is there a sex difference on this?
Yeah, there was actually. The studies about whether TV had an effect on weight were different from boys and girls. And one of the things I thought was interesting is that for the girls, if they had dinner with their families more often as teens, they were less likely, let me be specific, if they ate 3 to 4 family meals a week when they were teens, they had 1/3 the risk for extreme weight control practices. And if they ate 5 or more meals a week when they were teens, you know, a few years ago, as young adults now, they would have 1/4, so 75% less risk for extreme weight control practices.
Wow.
So there seems to be an encouragement here that this is a good time for the parents to demonstrate good attitudes toward food and the role of eating and the role of how and when you consume food in your life when the kids are young. And apparently it does last into adulthood.
Sue Nitzke, our guest today, UW Extension nutritional scientist, as we talk about family meals, nutrition, do we have the TV on or not? And learning a few things myself here. I hope you are too. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment for her. Maybe you've got some rituals that you do around the family time that are interesting too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or email us too at talk@wpr.org. And we, as a family, we have breakfast together and we have dinner together in the evening. So we eat a couple times a day together, and that's pretty good. And in the morning, it's more often than not something home. It's cereal with fruit and, you know, some juice and that sort of thing. And in the evening, it's often a home prepared, but sometimes it's, you know, a pizza.
Well, you know, that brings up something interesting, Larry. The Journal of the American Dietetic Association just a couple months ago had an editorial about family meals. And they pointed out that there's sort of a myth that family meals are disappearing. And they showed that actually, in spite of that myth, families report eating together really about 2/3 of the time.
Is that right? Oh my goodness! I would have expected a different result from that. I want to take that up some more, but Donna's online, and I want to give Donna a chance to participate here too. So let's go to Donna. Donna, and we'll come back to that too. Donna, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am the mother of 3 teens/young adults, and my husband and I always had family dinners when they were younger every night. And I just wanted to give a short suggestion to people who start having those teens that don't like anything or they're not hungry because they had a huge snack in the afternoon. My husband and I decided very early on that we would have everybody seated at the table. They didn't have to eat. They could just sit there and enjoy a glass of milk or juice or water, but we had to all sit together because that was our time to talk. So just a little suggestion to those that are having preteens and young teens, how to keep them at the table.
Oh, what do you think of that advice? Sounds good to me.
Sounds great.
It sounds great. Sue has got a little bit of a cold today, and so I'm sorry to have her on when she's feeling a little down here, but she's got a little bit of a cough today. So we appreciate having her here, and certainly appreciate what Donna had to say as well, because I think sometimes kids don't want to eat. what you've got? What, you know, is that an, how do you deal with something like that, Sue?
Ellen Satter says the first thing is to avoid undue pressure. So having rules is fun and, and fine, but you don't want to overdo it. So if mealtimes become unpleasant, then you've just kind of negated the value.
I understand exactly. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking mealtime now and family meals with Sue Nitzke, UW-Madison, UW Extension Professor of Nutritional Science. Really pleased to have Sue back. She comes by every so often to talk with us about one topic or another relating to how we eat and what we should eat and what we do eat, and certainly inviting your questions as we move along here. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Anywhere else, toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments or your input. Maybe you've got some suggestions, too. Laura in Vesper is online. So, Sue, let's go to Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hello there.
Thanks for calling.
You bet. I have three young kids. They are 5, 3, and 10 months. And I think they're all over the spectrum in terms of size. My oldest is very tall and he's lean. My three-year-old is just, I don't know, like skinny. He's 25 pounds. He loves to eat, but he's very thin. And my youngest is 10 months old. And I wonder about, we do make family mealtimes a regular practice, but should I be making special things for one and kind of trying to adjust, or should I just kind of ease off and things will balance out on their own? I always get comments about how tiny my three-year-old is, and so I wonder if I shouldn't be trying to do something to help bulk him up, and I'll take my answer off of the air.
All right, thank you.
That's a very important question, Laura, and most experts would say make some healthy, nutritious meals available. Make sure there's at least one item everybody likes. Let them explore. Let them eat as much as they're hungry for. And if they don't want what you're cooking or what you've served, make it clear that that doesn't mean they can load up on cookies, but there'll be a, you know, a chance for a snack or another meal later. And be very matter-of-fact about it. Don't make it a big emotional crisis. If your three-year-old turns out to be a smaller person, that happens. My, you know, I have two brothers that are over 6 feet tall, and I'm, you know, way shorter than that. And so the experts say really relax about this. Not relax to the point that you think it's okay to let them eat whatever they want whenever they want. It's still important to serve healthy food and to make the most convenient food that's available in your household foods that you would encourage them to eat. So there's fresh fruits and vegetables, or there's, you know, whole grain crackers and some cheese and that sort of thing. That's a much more convenient choice when it's snack time than cookies and chips and et cetera. The same thing with serving milk. Assuming you're milk drinkers, studies show that family meals are when children consume milk, and when they eat away from home or eat by themselves, they're much less, more likely to have soda or a beverage that's not as nutritious. So I guess the bottom line in all of that is a very relaxed and supportive atmosphere is important, and even more important than trying to stick to every single nutrition rule you ever heard of.
Okay. Paul in Oshkosh, we go to you next. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. First of all, I'm very much a champion or an advocate of the family meals, which is tougher and tougher to do, especially with athletic commitments and things like that. But one of the questions I have with respect to the studies is I'm wondering how well in these studies they're able to control for factors to find true cause and effect for factors such as how socially involved the parents are in their children in the first place. For example, the parents obviously who are very socially involved are going to have more family meals. How do you separate that from those who are not socially involved, not having the family meals, and be able to find cause and effect for the meals itself as compared to the different family structures?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought that up, Paul. This Minnesota study that I just referred to is the best data that we have so far because it follows kids over time. But there's no way to assign kids to family meals versus not family meals mm-hmm. and follow them over time. So it's they go together, and we can take from that family meals have value, and the family interaction is a factor there. And I can't tell you the number of studies that I read about how kids who eat meals with their families, you know, take less drugs as they're growing up and all kinds of wonderful things. And I think what that shows is that these kinds of behaviors, this involvement with the parents and the kids, the kind of social support that kids have at home, at the dinner table and in other ways, really pays off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe the family meals might be both, they might be causal and to some extent also a barometer of just of deep family commitment to the children as well.
I think you've hit it on the nose.
I think you're right. That's right. good comment, Paul. Thank you.
And related to that is the idea that, you know, if you have schedules where you just can't eat together every night, look for one day. Studies show that Sunday is the most common day for families to eat together, and Fridays are the least common, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense, in a way.
With football games and things, I suppose.
Sure.
And that the older the kids are, the less likely it is that they frequently can eat with their families. So, you know, go with the flow. Don't make it a crisis if everybody can't eat together all the time, but do it as often as you can and make it as pleasant and make the food as good as you can.
Did they look at eating out together? Because a lot of families, I mean, eat out 3-4 times a week because of events and so forth. Does that play any role?
It sure did. In this Minnesota study, it was called Project Eat is the name of that study. They showed that parents who bought 3 or more fast food meals, those were the parents who were more likely to be overweight themselves, and their kids ate more soda and chips over the course of the week. And less milk and fewer vegetables. And again, I think it's like what Paul said, is those behaviors may tend to go together. It's not that the fast food restaurants certainly have salads and vegetable items and milk on the menu, but people aren't as likely to make those choices in fast food restaurants, and the people who rely on fast food restaurants very frequently for, say, half of their dinners. Surveys show over and over again, whether you're talking about family meals or just the overall quality of their diets, they do tend to suffer. They're higher in saturated fat and sodium and sugar and on down the line.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Again, appreciate it. Joan in Eau Claire, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. I appreciate this program. What a wonderful topic. We have two teenagers in our house. Our son is a freshman in college. Our daughter is a senior in high school. And for many years now, our children have been involved in sports. And not only are they involved in sports, they're involved in sports on the same nights. with our son having graduated from high school last year, this year is going to be a little bit easier on us because during basketball season, we would probably have 4 games a week. So we're going everywhere all the time. Meals together rarely happen. Is that unfortunate? It's very unfortunate. I think that early on when we started them in soccer and baseball when they were in first and second grade, we would a lot of times have mac and cheese because it was easy on their stomach and then they could run and it wouldn't bother them. During the 5 years that our kids have been in high school sports, I mean, our son just graduated, obviously. It's a 5-year sequence for us. I mean, just grabbing something that didn't bother them, that was at home, and it wasn't always home-cooked, but sometimes these were mac and cheese meals just to get something in their stomach because we had to get to school or drive out of town for the games. It's tough.
Yeah.
Joan, there was a study at Iowa State that verifies what you're telling us. They were saying that the number one reason for not having family meals was conflicting schedules. And as I mentioned earlier, the older the children are, the more likely there are to be conflicting schedules. So what you do is do what you can, and Joan has given us a great example.
Yeah. You want your children to be involved in activities.
That's right. I'm not saying don't let them play sports.
Yeah. Oh, of course not. No.
Yeah.
No.
But it is tough. But you're raising a couple of good kids, I'll bet.
Well, they're in good shape.
Most of the time. I mean, you probably were thinking to yourself, that's the way I would think about my own. Thanks, Joan.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call. Muhammad in Madison, your turn next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm a single parent of 9 and 4-year-old girls, and I cook every day. My kids don't have, they have the experience of eating out, but not fast food. And one of the real purposes of what I feel is my responsibility that I think of kids that are, you know, forced to eat out or eat fast food is just learning table manners and learning the responsibility of picking up after yourself and having a part in, I'm not going to do all this by myself.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And so I think it's very important, and I probably eat a cross between what you would probably call kosher and organic, and I pay a little bit more for my food, but, you know, I feel that that's my responsibility. Now, once my kids get up and on their own, they probably might go to something different, but my hope is they'll eventually come back to the things that I invested in when they were young in terms of trying to make them healthy young people.
Yeah. Interesting point. Great point. Sue, a comment?
I totally agree, Muhammad. I think you have the right approach. And it's your kids are 9 and 4, and this is a great time to teach them those lessons. And I think it'll do well for you.
I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Roger in Burlington, it's your turn next. Hi, Roger.
Hi, I just wanted to weigh in on there's a little kind of a minor subcurrent of a debate here between family dinners and sports. And I just want to reflect my observation. I raised three kids. They're all actually either graduates of UW Madison or currently attending. In our family, we placed a much greater emphasis on the values of our family-ness than we did on the kinds of values that one acquires through participation in sports from an early age. Which isn't to say that the kids didn't participate in sports. They just didn't make it the focus of their lives. It was something they did as an activity, but it wasn't such a major thing that they would miss it if something else took precedence. So that's kind of the key of the message I'm trying to get across. It all has to do with values and what the family values today. And it seems to me that as we see other parents and they place as values on their kids, they look at things like sports as a way to teach their kids to be more competitive and more assertive, and we find that those same kind of family values can be taught just through interaction around the dinner table, and we put greater value on that. And that was my comment for you today.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Sue, a comment from you.
Roger, you brought up some important points. I think the most important thing was the idea that dinner time is one of the times where you can impart your values. And I'll just point out for parents who can't have dinner together with their kids, maybe breakfast. Maybe Sunday breakfast is a big deal at your house. So the idea of sitting around a table, having a good meal or as good a meal as you can manage with all the circumstances that families have these days, you know, that's what we're encouraging, and it sounds like most of your callers are right on.
Well, I tell you what, we always, just about always eat out at a restaurant in Madison for Saturday morning breakfast. And even my 4-year-old knows Bluefy's restaurant very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of we eat out then, and sometimes eat out Sunday mornings too. And those are, and they're fun breakfasts.
Right, and that's, you can still show your children how to have good table manners and how to have good social interaction around a meal. Mm. Bluefy's has wonderful food to choose from. So I think that sounds great, Larry.
You can join in, too. Chime in with your own questions or comments, maybe about how you deal with the family meal situation at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and and with your comments. And Nadine in Brooklyn, I think, wants to weigh in. So let's go to Nadine. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm really interested, and I just tuned in, so you may have already covered this. But what's the impact on children who are not having any kind of, or rarely having, meals with their, sit down meals with their families? What's the impact in terms of what kinds of diet, family structure, and so forth? In other words, I mean, I have a granddaughter, and I'm interested in knowing what the future impact is.
Sure.
I did talk about it a little bit. I talked about the foods that kids who eat with their families still eat more often when they, if they ate with their families more often than when they become young adults, they eat more fruit, dark green and orange vegetables. They drink less soft drinks. I'll also point out that the tendency to eat breakfast is higher for females who, once they're young adults, ate meals with their families when they were teens. They have a higher priority on structured mealtimes together and social eating. I also mentioned that they had less weight control practices, especially for the girls. And boys also had benefits, but it was especially strong for girls. And Nadine said she was thinking about these little girls. So I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, and I'm concerned. I'm a retired nurse, and one of the things that I see around me is that I think we're heading for a tremendous problem with osteoporosis in our children of today, growing up to be adults, and not having the kind of calcium intake, for example, that is really essential for long-term sound bone structure.
Well, there are a lot of health experts who have the same kind of worry, Nadine, and I join you in observing that as eating habits change and people eat at restaurants more often, if you're not a milk drinker, fine, but find a good source of calcium and make sure that it's in your diet and especially your children's diet while they're growing rapidly. Preschoolers and teenagers, especially girls, that's when their bones are forming and getting strong, so they can withhold the little bit of bone loss that's going to be inevitable after their age 35, and for women at menopause. So, you know, this is your chance to get it right, and I don't want to be, kind of giving everybody a guilt trip, but if the most common beverage choice at your house is soda, then you have to think about, okay, so where is the calcium going to come from? And think about those beverage choices. I'd encourage you to have milk or a milk equivalent. Full-strength juice is fine if it's just a glass or two a day. We don't want to overemphasize juice because it is a sweet source of calories. And good old-fashioned water for when you're just plain thirsty and have met your nutritional needs.
Thank you very much, Nadine, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Caressa a chance to be on from Toma, so we'll go there next. Caressa, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the crock pot has definitely saved our family meals. My husband and I have three children, and we have very busy schedules. And it's nice to get up in the morning or at night before going to bed, put a meal together, put the crock pot in the fridge, and then when you leave in the morning, you plug it in. When we come home, the crock pot is ready. The kids can make the decision as to whether or not they want to eat before an activity or after an activity. And my husband and I make ourselves available to sit down with one or two of the kids when they're ready to eat. So they're eating something nutritious, and we do have an opportunity to sit down at the table at different times.
Plus, the house smells good when you get home.
Absolutely, and there is nothing you can't cook in that crock pot.
Sue, what do you think?
It takes a little planning, and Caressa obviously has mastered that, so thanks for sharing that tip. I think you're doing just fine.
I like that idea as well. We do that ourselves, and it's fun. David in Boulder Junction, hello to you.
Hello, how are you, Larry?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. I just have just wanted to share a little tradition that we have at our family. Several months ago, we were having a discussion at the table. We have a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and a 13-year-old, and we came upon a word that we didn't know, so we went to the dictionary and we talked about the word. Now, every night when we get together for dinner, we bring one word every night to the table and we discuss it.
Oh.
I'm connected to Dr. Dictionary, I think it's called, on the Internet. It sends you one word every day. So it's a way for the kids to get a little nutrition for their tummies, but also for their heads, too.
Oh,
that's a great example of a little family ritual that has a lot of meaning. And, you know, it also gives you a kind of an automatic way to start pleasant conversations. You don't have to focus right in on what went wrong today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that's an excellent suggestion. Now, thanks for sharing.
Somebody's going to ask me, I didn't hear that website. What was that website again?
It's drdictionary.com.
Drdictionary.com. Oh.
And they'll send you, every morning they'll send you, or every day they send you a new word, and, you know, we'll bring it to the table, and after we discuss the other things, you know, the kids, it's funny, they look forward to it. They want to know what the new word is. So they're learning things like eponymous and all kind of wonderful things.
It's a great idea. Thanks, David.
All right, see you, Larry.
Yeah, thank you very much. And Chapman and Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are we doing today?
Great.
One of the things to talk about the sports situation again with kids, you know, I think, not to overplay it, but I think sometimes families use it as a crutch, because growing up, I was in sports. Some of my best friends were all in sports, close family friends. And, you know, for breakfast, we would have swim team practice in the morning. And after swim team practice and before heading off to school, we would all sit down at the pool and we would have breakfast together. We would bring breakfast with us. And so we would have a meal together, two families together, mm-hmm. In the morning before heading off to school. And then in the evenings, I could think of very few times when we still didn't have family meals together. It would just take place after soccer practice in the evening, and after baseball practice, after basketball practice, or the games, etc.
And because we're almost out of time, I appreciate your comment. And Sue, a comment from you.
Well, I think it's an example of families can use their ingenuities, whether it's having a picnic, a picnic indoors, like Chapman mentioned at the pool, or having Chinese takeout or spaghetti, whatever. There are ways to, most families can find ways to eat together more often if they make it a priority in their planning of their week. So I'd encourage everyone listening, there's a big family meal coming up in a few days. And that gets everybody around a table and has family rituals and all of that associated with it. And the more you can do that when it's not a holiday, even better.
Even better. Thank you, Sue. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. And thank you very much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.